Welcome to the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder, your daily podcast of the top education headlines from across the web. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Susie.
Good morning. It's the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder, where we break down the latest news in K-12 education and read it aloud so you don't have to. Welcome to today's episode, hosted by myself, Susie Brooks, and my good friend, Michael Bronder, where we will share stories and leave you informed and energized for the day ahead. Highlighted today, you'll hear about the University of Memphis could become its own K-12 school district under new legislation. You'll hear about ISTE Live and ASCD's annual conference to unite in 2025, and states with laws targeting LGBTQ issues, and how school hate crimes have quadrupled, and how parents are challenging the Book of Mormon, and more. So today, I'm sure you found some interesting stories, Michael, on the wire, and what headlines are you going to roll out to our listeners?
Yeah, leading it off today, Susie, California moves to ban fake gunfire in school active shooter drills. You can read about that in The Guardian or District Administration. We have links to that on K12leaders.com/breakdown. New legislation would standardize how public schools conduct such drills and avoid doing more harm than good. Also, Florida is going to be bolstering workforce development with a $25 million grant. That article is by Micah Ward in District Administration. The additional funding is part of a $100 million award in August to school districts and higher education institutions across Florida. We have new pathways launching high schools past college-only mindsets, and that's by Jamie Lamontis in District Administration. And three ways science teaches students skills that are critical in learning and life by Melody Hawkins in the 74. Links to all of those stories are on k12leaders.com/breakdown. And we're going to dive in here to our first in-depth story about parents challenging the Book of Mormon, the Quran, and others in this Utah school district. This was originally published in the Salt Lake Tribune, and we have a link to that on k12leaders.com/breakdown. Or you could, of course, search the Salt Lake Tribune yourselves. The original reporter for this was Courtney Tanner, and this is our breakdown of the story. In the ongoing debate over book bans in Utah schools, one district has concluded a controversial review over whether to keep major religious texts like the Bible, Book of Mormon, and Quran on library shelves. The controversy began last December when a parent in the Davis School District filed a complaint arguing the Bible should be removed because it contains vulgarity and violence, citing Utah's strict new law restricting indecent books in school. The district initially agreed, determining the Bible was too vulgar for elementary and middle school libraries, though it would remain in high schools. But that decision was quickly reversed amid a fierce backlash from residents and state lawmakers who accused the district of misinterpreting the law and embarrassing the state. However, the reversal on the Bible didn't end the book challenges. Shortly after, separate complaints were filed targeting the Book of Mormon, the foundational scripture for the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, as well as the Quran, the Holy Book of Islam. The complaints argued that those texts also contained inappropriate content like the Bible. The reviews for the Book of Mormon and Quran took 8 months to complete in the wake of the Bible controversy. Finally, in January, the district announced both books would be allowed to remain in all school libraries without elaborating on its reasoning, simply stating the texts do not violate state standards. The removals have been extremely controversial under Utah's new law, which requires any book considered pornographic to be pulled immediately with no exceptions. For other books, committees must weigh whether the overall literary value outweighs any inappropriate content. Hundreds of titles have already been removed from libraries across the state, the LGBTQ-related books facing a disproportionate number of challenges and bans. The legislature recently updated the law to make it even easier for books to be banned statewide based on parental complaints. However, advocates are urging Republican Governor Spencer Cox to veto those changes when he receives them. As the battle over appropriate school library materials rages on in Utah and nationwide, the religious texts have become a new flashpoint in this heated debate. And again, you can find that story and more on K12leaders.com, the breakdown. And thank you to Courtney Tanner for the original reporting from the Salt Lake Tribune.
A heated debate indeed, my goodness. We have a few more that are popping up here on our list. There's best deaf awareness lessons and activities that are featured by Tech and Learning. The following free deaf history and awareness lessons and activities highlight the accomplishments of deaf people in the arts, education, sports, law, science, and music. You can check that out. Also, how might parents' Bill of Rights impact the future of collecting student-related data? This is written by Sarah Hutchins, Laura Lashley, and Will Barker and is featured on K-12 Dive. Goes on to say three attorneys write that growing state legislature pushes create additional data privacy collection and access obligations for schools. It's always a hot topic and always one that I like to read more about. It's an endless topic that you can never know enough about for sure. Also, Texas takes over charter school network following years-long investigation. We went into that earlier this week, and that's being shared on K-12 Dive as well by Anna Murad. And it says, after probing allegations of financial and operational impropriety, the Texas Education Agency is appointing conservators to oversee IDEA public schools. So, speaking of public schools, right now there's also an article I'm going to dive into a little bit deeper. It's a very long one, so this is going to be more of a summary, but it is the University of Memphis could become its own K-12 district under new legislation. This one is coming out on K-12 Education, and the overview is basically that the University of Memphis, which currently operates three high-performing schools for K-12 students on its campus, is at the center of new legislation proposed by two Republican lawmakers from Memphis, Representative Mark White and Senator Brent Taylor aim to transform the university into its own K-12 school district, independent of the Memphis Shelby County Schools, which is the state's largest school system. The proposition details include that the legislation known as the Innovative School District Act seeks to introduce a novel school governance model. It leverages public universities to scale up proven innovations in K-12 teaching and learning. And under this proposal, the University of Memphis could create its own K-12 school system, including elementary, middle, and high schools. These schools would fall under the supervision of a university-led district, moving away from the MSCS oversight. Additionally, the university would have the authority to establish new schools, potentially collaborating with charter operators without needing MSCS approval. These new schools could be located throughout Greater Memphis. The goal is to replicate successful school models that have achieved excellent academic results in Tennessee. The University of Memphis currently operates three schools on its campus: Campus School, University Middle School, and University High School. Although these schools do not have academic entry requirements, they have recently received A grades and reward school designations from the state due to impressive student growth. MSCS values its long-standing partnership with the University of Memphis and considers the three schools important educational options, and the district intends to maintain its current arrangement with the university. If approved, this legislation could have statewide implications if other universities follow a similar path. The Innovative School District Act envisions a new governance system where university boards of trustees would handle school governance. These boards would appoint members to perform functions similar to a traditional school board. Not all higher education institutions would be eligible. The university must have a comprehensive doctoral program and operative training schools for clinical teaching experiences and educator mentoring. In summary, the University of Memphis has the opportunity to chart a new course in K-12 education by becoming its own school district, potentially reshaping how successful successful educational models are replicated across the state. So again, this was just a summary. If you'd like to dive deeper, you can visit that article by heading over to K-12 Leaders/breakdown and reading a little bit deeper, but quite a unique setup there down in Memphis, Tennessee.
Sorry, my first day with a new Zoom.
That's all right. We love dead space for a moment. Just a time to breathe and panic a little.
So that was a great readout, Susie. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
For that summary. Elsewhere in the headlines, we have a nice resource at the Learning Network on the New York Times, where there is an exercise around a new opinion writing contest. And I invite you to check that out on the Learning Network at the New York Times. You can find a link here at k12leaders.com/breakdown. Let's see, in Allentown, the school district selects IotaCom's smart building solution for K-12. And that's an indoor air quality solution. You can check that out on k12leaders.com/breakdown. And then we have a link to an editorial treating our story from earlier this week about why the West Virginia micro school failed. Best of K-12 education, another opinion piece here against the current Career Academy. This is about the Omaha tribe, and you can find a link to that on k12leaders.com. And we'll also, let's see here, dive into an article that was originally published on the Washington Post, is behind a paywall. So this is our summary of that article. You can find that original post on the Washington Post. This is by Laura Meckler, Hannah Nathanson, and John D. Harden. And the link is here on k12leaders.com/breakdown. But in states with laws targeting LGBTQ issues, school hate crimes have quadrupled. According to the Washington Post analysis of FBI data, hate crimes targeting LGBTQ plus people on school campuses have sharply risen in recent years, climbing fastest in states that have passed laws restricting LGBTQ plus student rights and education. In the 28 states with restrictive laws, the average number of reported hate crimes was more than three times higher in 21 and 22 than from 2015 to 2019. Overall, there were an average of 108 anti-LGBTQ plus hate crimes at schools reported per year from 2015 to 2019 on both college and K-12 campuses. In 21 and 22, that more than doubled to 232 on average per year. So that went from 108 to 232 per year. The rise was even steeper when looking just at K-12 school campuses in restrictive states, increasing from an average of about 28 per year to 90 per year in the 21-22 school year. That is more than a quadrupling. And there are links here to the original source data. At the same time, calls to LGBTQ plus youth crisis hotlines have skyrocketed. The Trevor Project, which provides crisis intervention, received about 230,000 calls, texts, and online chats in the 2021-22 year, but over 5,500,000 the following year. Similarly, the Rainbow Youth Project saw calls rise from around 1,000 per month in 2022 to over 1,400 per month last year, with the top reason being anti-LGBTQ plus political rhetoric. The Post cites examples like 17-year-old transgender student Cardin in Virginia, who faced harassment from classmates, calling them slurs and telling him, I'm sorry, call, they use the pronoun him here. The Post cites examples like 17-year-old transgender student Cardin in Virginia, who faced harassment from classmates calling him slurs and telling him to die. Cardin argues politicians' anti-LGBTQ plus rhetoric has shaped adults' views in his conservative county. Another example is a transgender teenager in Mississippi whose mother said he faced regular harassment over his appearance, missed weeks of school from bullying-induced breakdowns, and had suicidal thoughts, which she partially attributed to the state's ban on transgender students playing sports matching their gender identity. Studies show that LGBTQ plus youth are at a particular risk. The CDC's 2021 survey found over a third of gay, lesbian, and bisexual students were bullied either on campus or online that year, compared to just one in six straight students. Experts say the restrictive laws create a hostile environment and may make students more reluctant to report incidents in conservative states. Advocacy groups argue the laws send a message that LGBTQ plus students are unwanted. However, the higher per capita rates in liberal states may reflect those places being more likely to report and have policies encouraging it, not necessarily more incidents occurring. The article also highlights the February death of non-binary student Nex Benedict in Oklahoma following an alleged bullying incident as drawing increased national attention. The Rainbow Youth Project saw a crush of calls from Oklahoma that month. Oklahoma has enacted several laws restricting transgender rights in recent years and is considering further measures this year, which the state superintendent of schools supports to counter what he calls radical gender theory. The Post obtained the hate crime data from the FBI's database using the agency's public API, filtered for anti-LGBTQ plus hate crimes on school campuses. The data is voluntarily reported by law enforcement agencies. The Post also interviewed students, families, advocates, and researchers nationwide to report on this alarming trend amid the ongoing wave of legislation targeting LGBTQ plus rights and expression in education. I will point out, and we'll do our best to get this addressed quickly, but there is a typo in the original post. Nex Benedict is cited in the post as transgender, but they identified as non-binary. So we'll have that errata addressed quickly. And Susie, back to you.
Well, we just have a few more. Florida Don't Say Gay settlement loosens LGBTQ plus restrictions in classrooms. This is a story coming out of K-12 Dive by Naz Modin. The deal significantly limits the scope of the law in multiple areas that had concerned educators, students, and parents for chilling speech and expression. And then we have from Jim Fields at the 74. This is actually a video that you can watch. It's a New York teen discovers biomarker to identify those at risk for suicide. It says this video is part of our ongoing STEM Superstar series. You can meet all the young trailblazers here. And Natasha Kul Viwat, having been interested in neuroscience and mental health from an early age, noticed that neuroscience wasn't making as much progress in mental health diagnoses and interventions as she thought it should. So you'll want to check that out. You can access it through k12leaders.com/breakdown. And my last story that I'm going in on is not a very long one. It's coming from Tech and Learning. And a lot of people were very interested when they heard that ISTE and ASCD were coming together, how that would play out. And so they've just recently announced that ISTE Live and ASCD annual conference is going to ignite, not is going to unite, not ignite. It's going to unite in 2025. Their annual conference will co-locate starting next year in San Antonio, Texas. ISTE and ASCD will be co-locating ISTE Live and the ASCD annual conference starting in 2025. The events will be happening together June 29th to July 2, 2025 in San Antonio, Texas. When ASCD and ISTE decided to join forces, we did so with the goal of bringing together a community of educators and innovators to design the future of education, said Jennifer Reagan Foer of ASCD plus ISTE Chief and Experience Officer in a recent press release announcing the partnership. At the heart of the merger was the desire to build a united community of passionate educators who would spark joy and design transformative learning experiences for their students. The events will also coincide with Tech and Learning's Regional Leadership Summit, which will also be held in San Antonio in 2025. So I'm looking forward to that. As the former president of the local ASCD affiliate, it's nice to see the ways in which both organizations are coming together in this merger. So I look forward to San Antonio in 2025.
Nothing like San Antonio in June.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful place. It's a great place for a concert,
I agree, it is.
a conference.
And that too. So.
So this has been the K-12 Leaders K-12 Breakdown with Susie Brooks and Michael Bronder. Thank you all for joining us this morning. I'm constantly amazed at the flow of news that comes through, and our feed is constantly updating.
It
Join us again tomorrow morning with Susie Brooks and myself as we read out the stories that we think matter to K-12 leaders. And until then, have a great day at school, and don't you dare trade your sandwich at lunch.
is. Have a great one.